to a podcast greater than yourself, season 5. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about sobriety, the 12 steps, sponsorship, or just want to contact someone from the podcast? Email us at podcastgreaterthanyourself@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at dr_silkworth or a podcast greater than yourself. If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a rating on your podcast app and share the show with anyone who may benefit.
Welcome back to a podcast greater than yourself. My name is Ted. I am joined today by my co-host, Tony S.
What's up?
I always forget you're going to do that. And our
remember
guest
that?
Today.
Remember that commercial?
This is a commercial and also more than one movies? Isn't...
I think it all came from the beer commercial back when you would get like one meme in a year from the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And you just had to make it last.
Still going, too. And we are joined by our friend, once again, Jane.
Hi there.
It's getting complicated because Jane and I have co-hosted episodes together. And then, it's just kind of a reunion every time. I'm no longer sure. Like, before this episode started, I was like, which one of us is doing this? I
didn't even remember. Who's in charge here, exactly?
Jane's cat. What's this one's name?
This is Andy. And the last time she bombed a Zoom call, she turned off my computer. So now I'm, like, guarding the off switch. Hopefully nothing happens, but if I suddenly disappear, you'll know why.
We'll just play through it.
Yeah.
Today we are defending. This is an in defense of, and the topic that Jane has chosen to defend is in defense of non-alcoholics in AA. Correct?
Yeah, I'm here to lose friends and alienate people.
I can't wait. I want to emphasize that Jane picked this, and no, this was one that, like, any one of us could have defended, perhaps, and probably none of us were. I don't know. Maybe you are passionate about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my defense is pretty simple. I don't know if I can go on about this for very long, but I guess my defense is just, like, how are you going to keep them out? When I went to AA, I didn't think I was a real alcoholic. I had never heard that phrase, you know, used in a meaningful way before. And if I had, I would have been like, yeah, I'm definitely not one of those. I thought a real alcoholic was someone who drank first thing in the morning and, like, couldn't stop drinking without medical help and had a ton of DUIs. If I'd had any thought whatsoever that people in AA were going to be sizing me up to decide whether or not I was the real thing, I probably just wouldn't have gone. I would have been like, oh yeah, I don't belong there. I think the open door policy is kind of important for, like, bringing people in who aren't sure, you know, and then hopefully when you get there, like, somebody helps you figure it out, which did not happen in my case for an embarrassingly long time. But I don't want AA to become, like, I don't know, the subreddits that I was trying to seek help on before I came in, where people definitely did have that hierarchy of realness, and they were sometimes, like, commenting on your posts to be like, yeah, I don't know why you're here. I don't think you're a real alcoholic, right? Because I did, there are lots of subreddits for stopping drinking. This was not our stop drinking. This was another one. There are places on Reddit where, people in active alcoholism go to, like, sort of egg each other on and encourage each other to get worse. Have you seen this? Tony Stark knows what I'm talking about. Excuse me.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. Hey, don't break it. Exactly. Leap it out. These are real. They're real kind of doomer subreddits that are just very, very bleak places. Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, they have sister subs where, like, those people, like, are like, oh shit, I gotta straighten my life out. But they still kind of have that attitude, like, No, I'm a real one. And, you know, when I was in this cycle of like a binge drinking and then coming to and then going through like mild to moderate withdrawals, I was like extremely paranoid. And I was absolutely convinced that people were going to be like talking about me behind my back. And one of the reasons that I continued to go to like the AA fellowship that I landed in was because they had demonstrated to me that they did not talk shit about each other, and particularly not about that subject. Like, they're very much like, yeah, if you have a drinking problem, you can be here. So, you know, that was important to me in the beginning, at least, in like seeking the help that I needed on a really basic level.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's it. That's my defense.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And the question I think that sort of matters is, what does it mean, or what are we talking about when we say non-alcoholics in AA? Because obviously at the beginning, all a person knows, all I knew at least, is I seem to have some real problems with alcohol. And I couldn't have told you in any kind of precise way, the way that I can now, because I have been taught things I didn't know then, what exactly that problem was, other than I drink too much, right? And it's causing problems
sometimes.
In my life. Sometimes, right? Sometimes I drink too much, and sometimes it's causing problems in my life. And the sometimes is they're they're occupying more and more of the field. Put it that way. And I probably would have been just as likely to talk about the consequences I was causing myself. You know, I've lost this job, my family's falling apart, etc. Than I was the actual problem, because I didn't really know what the actual problem was. The place that I eventually, and you know, you, Jane, were talking about this a little bit, the place where I eventually, but not right away, was explained what alcoholism is, was this fellowship, right? And eventually I was introduced to that. So of course, a person at the very beginning who doesn't know what is alcoholism, because people use that word to mean all sorts of things in popular culture. And that's fine. I'm not here to, you know, that and in AA, indeed. Of course, at the beginning, I think that the first and in many ways, I think most urgent task should be to help a person, I always find that the term qualifying to be a little harsh sounding, right? Because it's more about discernment, right? Mm-hmm. To help the new person discern what is the nature of your problem? And we can supply some useful ideas about and useful questions to ask about the nature of that problem, right? Which is what we do when we work with somebody one-on-one, right? To take the first step, you need to know the answer to, you know, when I start drinking, can I reliably control the amount that I drink? And when I really want to, you know, do I find I can't quit entirely? What I'm sort of having a harder time with, what I always have a harder time with is, you know, Jane, in your case, it's easy because when the concepts were introduced to you and you sort of went through that discernment, you were like, yeah, that is my problem. That is the nature of my problem.
I am.
And so, of course, you had ended up where you ought to have been. But surely if a person, and I was talking to a guy like this the other day, I had him read sort of the kind of relevant material and I asked him what kind of a drinker he sort of seemed like he was. And he said, oh, I'm kind of the moderate drinker that is described in this. Uh-huh. That person surely has no further business hanging around a fellowship that, after all, one half of the name is alcoholics, right? Because, I mean, of course, this particular person, I think, has no real need of it and maybe no desire. But what could be the conceivable point of a person once they've gone through that process and they're like, yeah, you know, I think I can stop drinking on my own power when I really want to, then what's the point? What are you hanging around to do? What, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that because it is nonsensical to me. Well, I think we also all have the perception of like, so I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I always say this. There's a particular kind of sponsee that I sometimes end up getting or talking to, and they're like, they really hate Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always end up saying, listen, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I give them like this canned defense because I'm about to shit all over it, right? But it's like, it saved my life. One of the most important things in my life today, it's given me this, miracles have happened in my life because of it. And so I love it and I feel compelled to defend it and to be a guardian of it. That said, it fucking blows. I fucking hate it, you know? And what I was just going to say is like, I think from our perspective, we're all like, I'm glad to know that I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad, honestly, that I learned that I was an alcoholic and that I took the steps because my life now is better than it was even when drinking was fun, right? And so I'm better off for it. But still, yep, there's a non-zero part of me that's like, how lit would it be to not be an alcoholic? Like, how cool would it be to not have to go to AA meetings, to not get phone calls all the time, to just... candidly, to just get hammered like pretty much every day. Like, yeah, I would love to do that if it didn't all come with all the other stuff. And so when I see people who are like, no, I think I'm a moderate drinker, but I'm just gonna keep going to AA indefinitely, it's bizarre.
Do you have that experience in sponsorship? Because in my experience, there are three types of non-alcoholics in AA. Wow. There are the ones who start going to AA meetings, never get a sponsor, never try to do the steps, never learn anything about step one, and just keep going. And then they learn to like dominate the group because they're the ones who are able to like quit drinking and then like give people terrible ideas, terrible advice, right? And then there are the ones who, when they come to me, like, and I'm trying to take them through step one, I guess what I'm trying to say is I've never had somebody openly identify themselves as a moderate drinker and then stick around. Like, I've had people who were clearly moderate drinkers, but they wouldn't admit it. Yeah. I would be like, look, these are the two primary symptoms of alcoholism. And they're like, oh, well, I don't have that. And I'm like, yeah, that's, I'm very polite about it. I'm like, that's how we define it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we would not qualify such a person as an alcoholic, right? And then they get mad, and then they insist, no, I really am an alcoholic. But you're describing someone who, you describe the moderate drinker to them. They go, oh, yeah, that's me. And then they're like, cool, I'm going to stick around because the coffee is just so good.
Yeah, I guess I've never encountered that either. I've never encountered somebody who really believes that. You're right. It's an excellent point. They still believe that they're, and usually it's because of some consequences that have happened in their lives that they can't not be an alcoholic, but it is.
Yeah. Like they're court ordered, for example. Right. I mean, one prominent group of people whom I would aim this argument at is like the judiciary of this country, for whom the remedy for every drunk driver seems to be court ordered AA attendance. And a lot of those folks, although obviously behaving irresponsibly, really, they don't feel like they need to be there. They don't want to be there. It's bad for the vibes. Right. Yeah. Now, and of course, there may be, I'm sure there are like 8 million people in this category. And if you're listening to this and this is you, I'm not saying that no real alcoholic has ever been, found themselves in a place of recovery and in a story that starts with a judge ordering them to do something. Yeah. Of course, God can help people get sober all sorts of crazy ways. And we not saying that. But what I am saying is that there is this harmful merger of the idea that like alcoholism just means you got some kind of drinking problem. And eventually, because there are so many more people who just are causing trouble in their life with alcohol than there are the alcoholic described in this book who cannot stop or moderate even when they really want to, that eventually, like the whole point of AA was that like that was where I located a person who actually understood the problem I was having when I didn't, right?
Yeah.
Because as you both know, it could be incredibly baffling from the inside to be like, why cannot I stop doing this? This is crazy, right? And you know, there's a great passage in early in the book that's like, look, once in a while, the alcoholic may tell you the truth, and the truth is that he has no more idea than you do, right? Why he takes the first drink. If AA is going to be a place where I can reliably find people who can tell me, hey, listen, this is what your problem is. It's actually worse than you might think. There is a solution, but it's quite drastic, but it will save your life. that's sort of inconsistent with like large proportions of the fellowship being able to kind of stay sober on fellowship and peer support.
Yeah.
You know, because I vividly remember a lot of my early experiences in the fellowship where I think people were kind of in this category who meant well, who did not know any better than I did what alcoholism kind of really was. And so gave me advice that seemed totally logical, like just don't drink and go to the next meeting, right? And then when it failed for me, I thought that what was failing for me was like Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, that doesn't work. Maybe I need therapy. Maybe I need this. Maybe I need that. When in reality, I had never actually encountered Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And it's just lucky that like I just eventually came across somebody who sort of brought this to me. That to me is the problem of proportions, right? Because, anyway, I'm going to talk.
Do y'all think it's because it's sort of like we've created, there's a degree to which Alcoholics Anonymous has created this problem for itself by being so successful early on and becoming so popular that we now attract it's a huge number of people. Like, and so people are coming into AA, I think we've talked about this before, not in the podcast, but people are coming to AA much, 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 much earlier on in their drinking careers than they ever would have 80 years ago, or man, how long has it been? 90 years ago, you know? Like, we're all of us perhaps potentially higher bottom drunks than Bill and Bob were. There's no good scientific way to evaluate that, but you know, the average level at which someone finds themselves in an AA meeting is probably less bad off than it once was, right?
I think that's got to be true, because The book, I think about this a lot, the book's early description of alcoholism says, look, if you doubt whether you've entered the dangerous territory where you've lost the power of choice, why don't you try staying sober for a year? And it says, we think few to whom this book will appeal can stay sober anything like a year. Many will be drunk the day after making their resolutions, and most within a few weeks. And yet I routinely see people showing definite signs of alcoholism, right, who describe experiencing phenomenon of craving and stuff like that, who stay sober on their own willpower, essentially, plus peer support. In other words, people who have not recovered, who have not worked the steps, staying sober for much longer than that. Yeah. And so those people, if they are what I think the book would call a potential alcoholic, they experience a phenomenon of craving, but their power of choice is not totally destroyed, they are kind of around in ways that I don't think that it was anticipated that they would want to be initially.
Yeah, I've made a lot of friends like that in like fellowship AA. And, you know, in my experience, they are able to stay sober on their own will, but like not happily.
Yeah.
You know, they're like constantly, they're constantly sharing in meetings that they're struggling. They're like, I've gone to 4 meetings today. I just have to get to bedtime, you know. And, eventually they find a sponsor and go through the steps and become happier people. And I'm in two minds about that, because on the one hand, I'm like, I mean, if you're happy with getting sober that way, I'm glad you had that experience, but damn, it's hard to watch them struggle. And I'm like, it's right there. You could just do this thing and it doesn't have to be this struggle. But you know, there is definitely this, I don't know, this like valorization of like the illness in AA sometimes, where it's like, oh, you're heroic if you're like hanging on for dear life one day at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like people like admire that, and then you're like, oh, you're so brave. So then like, why would you go through the steps and get well if you're getting that kind of attention?
Which is worse? Is it worse to be like, if you could choose, I'm not in charge of AA, obviously, and I can't control other people's experiences, but would I rather have somebody be like technically sober, like abstinent from alcohol, but not particularly happy and linger for a long time and then eventually hopefully recover? Or would I rather people get churned out of this bitch really quick and get beat up some more and then come back in? Because the thing about, I said the high bottom thing, but it's like, you don't have to be a low bottom drunk to recover from alcoholism. Like, all you have to do is accept the two things Tony said in the beginning. You just have to internalize and be confident that these two things happen to you I think the book says, or I kind of have whatever, like there's these things that are described, like, and if you have those things, then it should be pretty clear, and that should be sufficient, right? It's not in practice. We all know that it's not. The people don't. The academic reasoning of it is not sufficient for them to stay sober, even if they accept that it is true. At least partially accept that it's true. They end up spending a lot more time drinking or being miserable in AA.
Yeah, absolutely. As between those two, I feel like I've lived both of those lives, right? I was never able to stay sober that successfully on fellowship and willpower and things like that. But like, I'd have intermittent drinking episodes, but I'd like keep, you know, returning and being unhappy and stuff like that. And I feel very lucky, actually, that I'm not, whatever in my constitution is sort of different from other people, whether I just got like a strong form of the disease or whether I'm just a weak-willed person, the latter striking me as more likely. I just wasn't made of strong enough stuff to kind of hang around in and say, well, look, see, I've gotten a year sober, I've gotten 2 years sober, and I'm sort of haven't had this spiritual experience, but maybe the spiritual experience just kind of, you know, maybe it's just something they just kind of talk about, right? I'm glad that basically I was able to have a deep and authentic first step experience, which sounds nice when you put it that way, but was the most terrifying thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah. Because it was only having that experience that drove me into the arms of a spiritual way of life that was laid out for me. And as a result, my life completely transformed in ways that I still kind of can't believe are real. Mm-hmm. And yes, that involved some suffering, right? That perhaps could have been avoided if I'd been provided with, like, because I mean, you can, if you wrap somebody in enough bubble wrap, you can you can keep somebody unhappy and powder dry, miserable, in chemical sobriety for a long time sometimes. And I feel like a lot of the fellowship culture at the moment is really designed to do that, to try to discourage people from drinking before they've really had an authentic first step experience and thus can still act on that discouragement, and providing them enough peer support where, yeah, they're miserable, but they're able to kind of scrape it out a day at a time, doing day counts, kind of passing the time in meetings. They've got so much, you know, people calling them, they're calling other people, that like they just kind of so they stay unhappy like that. And I think the reason for that is an authentic first step experience is lethal for some people.
Yeah.
I have had close friends who have died before they understood the full nature of their problem. And that is very sad. But the alternative to keep someone alive in a state of just year to year grinding unhappiness, I don't really feel like that's that, deciding that for someone else. Like, I'm going to keep you around here because it's too dangerous for you to go really understand the truth about your situation. I don't feel comfortable making that decision for other people, you know? And I feel like a lot of the fellowship's culture is about a kind of fear of what will happen if somebody can learn for themselves what we learned about ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a good point, and I was going to make the same point, is that, you know, that's a hard choice, because the bottom is death for some people. The first step experience is death for some people. Like, yeah, I'm like you. I know people who... you can die fairly quickly with a very serious alcohol problem. I know people who like committed suicide while drunk, or like, you know, got in a deadly car accident while drunk. So, you know, it's not always a long, slow decline. I don't know which ones of those I would choose. That's, they both sound pretty awful. I do know that having had an effective first step experience is what propelled me into like doing the work to get well, though. And that was definitely critical. I think it's more effective if you've been told what alcoholism is, right? So that you know what it is when you're having it.
Totally.
My wife, her point, which is valid. So my wife is often the person who reels me back in, and she's like, you sound like a dick. And she's usually right and counterpoints me. But she'd be like, what does it matter? Just let them come, to bring it back to the topic of me. Just let the non-alcoholics come. Like, who cares? And I think that probably she's mostly right. And Jane, you're mostly right. That like, just even if as a practical matter we could keep them out, which we can't, what, just let them have their, just let them come. But the way in which it is a problem is when it becomes, when those people, I've probably been said before, but start sponsoring, or when those people, like you said, Jane, take over the meeting, mm-hmm. and they create an environment or a culture in which the things we are describing is not, it's not even just that it happens sometimes, the things we're describing is by far and away, in my experience, the norm. And so, you know, I think that suboptimal, I don't know that we have a fix for it, and like we were just discussing, I'm not sure that ultimately it matters, because I think ultimately most people who, I think the people who fully work the 12 steps will get better as long as they do it. It's like, when will they? Will they? When will they? Who's going to take them through it? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, right. And remember, the perspective that I always imagine this from is the new person comes in. When I came in, I don't know the nature of my problem. And I don't know which of the people I'm looking at have the same problem as me and which don't. In fact, I just assumed at the beginning, everybody here has got the same problem as me, right? They drank too much and they kind of screwed up their life or whatever. And then you've got somebody who's, you know, they're nice. They're sort of giving you advice on what to do. Perhaps they're even, you know, they're acting as a sponsor. And they're sort of supplying stuff that I am certain, unbeknownst to them, I'm not trying to sabotage an in person, unbeknownst to them, but definitely unbeknownst to this, you know, by hypothesis, you know, actual alcoholic, mm-hmm. Is not going to work for them. And is not, in other words, and because for one thing, you can't take all 12 steps if you're not an alcoholic as described in this book. You can't, I mean, the first one is a question of powerlessness that you cannot honestly answer yes. So as a result,
that's a good point.
That's what that's going to do is, you know, a person may die in that interval too, you know.
That's true.
Person may die trying to execute instructions like, you know, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. They may get to day 67 and meeting 67 is just more than they can take. And that's the day that the sort of, you know, everything sort of snaps and they're lost. So one way I sort of think about it is, as you say, Jane, how are you going to keep them out, right? And fair enough, right? The door's got to be open because, it's, for one thing, the door has got to be administered by this ramshackle group of people that we actually are. Yeah. So, you know, it's not exactly like we're disciplined Leninists, you know, administering the Bolshevik Party in the early 20th century. Like, this is, you know, we got to have realistic... yeah. But one thing that is possible is that doesn't mean that the moderate or the hard drinker needs to be encouraged to stay.
Yeah.
Right. That's, and there I feel like there is a great deal of that sort of culture that, like,
keep coming back.
If you're here, you're in the right place, et cetera, et cetera.
It's gratuitous.
Like, well, there's really no reason to be telling people like that. There's really no reason to be telling people not to drink at all, right? Certainly not, no matter what, but there's no reason to be discouraging alcohol use at all, because the real alcoholic can't follow that advice, and the person who's not a real alcoholic doesn't need it.
A waste of breath. Yeah. I think about like, the alternative is so bad though, right? The alternative to allowing them to come is so bad. Like, Alcoholics Anonymous would be ruined. Okay, how are we gonna administer this? Like, and yeah, these fuckers are everywhere. They outnumber us like 10 to 1. So we're going to lose this one anyway. Like, that's the difference. Like, it's the thing that pisses me off most, probably, is that, like, yeah, there are no rules. We say that there are traditions, but you don't have to follow them. If you don't follow them, nobody's going to kick you out. We can't kick you out. And so it's deeply frustrating, but also, I think, probably, I guess, necessary. Like, somebody sent me a clip that Steve-O was on a podcast and listened to him, and he perfectly described the problem of alcoholism to a T. I'm listening to Steve-O and I'm just like, this fucker's got it. Like, thank God this dude's out here on this podcast. I mean, I think it's a problem that he's talking about Alcoholics Anonymous so candidly on the podcast, but whatever. I was like, at least he's correctly identifying the problem. Mm-hmm. And then this motherfucker whiffs the solution so hard. He perfectly described my experience drinking, and he goes, and that's why you got to find a community. You got to find a community of people that love you, and you got to just...
Oh, no.
You got to get in where you fit in, basically. And so deflating to hear. And it's like, Steve-O's got a lot of people in his life. There are a lot of people, and I'm sure there are like, I'm sure that there are big book thumpers in the comments of all the Instagrams and TikToks telling Steve-O that he doesn't understand. But like, if you're Steve-O, he's not going to fucking listen to you, bro. Don't, your angry comment isn't going to change his mind. But I guess my point is, he's so close. And I've seen enough Jackass to feel like, yeah, Steve-O's probably, probably a real alcoholic. And it's just bizarre. How have we created the conditions under which this person can still believe this?
Yeah. I was going to say having a stronger culture of understanding what step one is and communicating that to people would probably help, but you just kind of proved me wrong there. Some people can understand step one and still give absolute nonsense advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, I would just note that although it's not a thing I think could be accomplished by a decree from like the, you know, world headquarters or whatever that office is named, we do know that in the real world, there are groups that enforce, I think, even you know, sort of dubious membership restrictions, like membership restrictions based on gender, and they have sort of no trouble, you know, quote, keeping people out, because by and large it's understood. The reason I've never been, for example, to a self-identified women's meeting is because I'm not a woman, and so I wouldn't feel like it would be appropriate for me to be there. So there really doesn't need to be anybody barring me from the door. And I assume that if a man did show up at such a meeting, a polite explanation that this was not an appropriate place for him to be would be delivered, or maybe not so polite if it persisted, and so on and so on. And obviously, you know, alcoholism is a little difficult, it's a little more difficult to sort of discern it to the front end and so on, but, you know, one possibility is that groups could administer themselves such that, like, if a new person shows up, it would be a good idea anyway for a person to greet them and say, you know, how are you? You know, like, welcome, I haven't seen you before. Like, I'm so-and-so. Get to know them a little bit and ask, you know, and like, meet them, right? And find out, like, where they are in this process of discernment. Are they just a traveler from out of town? Are they here looking for sponsees? Are they just kind of got a drinking problem? They don't know what. And then appropriately figure out how to be helpful to that person, which might include just like, okay, cool. Well, nice to meet you. I'm so-and-so. And, you know, the free coffees that way. There's that kind of culture has existed at certain places and in certain at certain times, right? Where you couldn't walk into a meeting and, you know, be new and have nobody like introduce themselves and be like, hey, basically, how can I be helpful to you? And we could do that.
The thing that's so striking to me about that, what you, it's almost exactly what you described, is like, that's honestly what I go to AA meetings and do. I'm like, I think you're describing a culture of effective sponsorship, because I don't do it at the door. I usually do it in the parking lot after, but I'm like, oh, you're new. Let me explain some stuff to you. Like, let me be helpful to you and figure out your situation. And then I can, hopefully, I mean, it's hard to do, folks, but tactfully explain to somebody, hey, maybe you're in the wrong place. I mean, good sponsorship, I think, the sponsorship, the way the big book describes it, that would be inevitable. So just if we had a culture of more big book sponsorship, I think that would happen as a matter of course. It's just, yeah, I'm just, it's fascinating. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that. We should all, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I was desperate for that when I was new. Like, I had two main concerns when I was new. And I did the thing where I would get a ton of phone numbers at meetings and call a bunch of people.
Oh, you called?
And I did half of that.
Yeah. I did half of that too.
One of my like human power strategies was like, well, if I'm calling people constantly at night, maybe I'll forget to drink. It didn't work.
You're my nightmare.
Then I found out that I found out that like you can drink and then call people. So it didn't work. But you know, I basically had two questions, like one of them being like, what was your experience at AA? Have you gotten well? What was that like for you? Right. Just like trying to figure out, do I want to be here? Is this a healthy organization? And the second one was like, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And it amazes me how many people I called and just got the same answer. Like, well, nobody can tell you if you're an alcoholic. And I think they were taking that line in the big book very literally, where it's like, we don't like to diagnose anyone as an alcoholic. Meaning when you're sitting down with someone to have a step one conversation, you don't tell them like, oh, well, you're definitely an out, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there are criteria that they could have given me, but they would say like, well, we can't tell you if you're an alcoholic, but, and then they would say things like, I've heard your story in a meeting before, or like, but you know, this is a great group of people and you should stick around. And that like drove me insane. I was like, you guys are like the alcoholism people. You should be able to answer that very basic question.
Yeah.
It was really frustrating.
There was a skit that John made, I think, like in season one, where they would do the, they would like, say, somebody would ask a question and then the would-be sponsor would say some nonsensical bullshit and then they'd do a translation, and the translation was like always, I don't know how to help you. And that's exactly what it is. It's like, they literally just don't know how to help, right? Like, what, because have you been to a meeting, like the meeting I met my sponsor at, I literally got up and said, I have 30 days today. I don't have a sponsor. I'm not sure about step one. I need a sponsor. I ended my share and I almost got the fuck, I almost made it out of that building without somebody showing up. My sponsor got me at the door. But the amount of times that I'll hear that in meetings and then not see anybody go, like somebody delivering themselves on a fucking platter, and you, Jane, calling people and like,
can you imagine sitting in a meeting hearing somebody say that? I'd be like fastening a bib, you know what I mean? Like, ha, 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 that was an easy one.
Yeah, it never happens. Like,
what the hell? Like, if somebody were to call me, because I have my phone on, like, I mean, my phone number on tons of lists, in person, Zoom meetings, whatever. It's rare that anyone calls me and their first question is like, do you think I'm an alcoholic? Like, what is alcoholism? Can you explain this to me? I would be so stoked if somebody asked me that question.
It's a gift.
They almost never do. They just launch into, you know, their drunkalog or, you know, not to criticize. I mean, we're trained to do that in AA meetings, right? So like, of course they would think that that's what I want to hear, but.
Yeah. I don't think it's not a criticism in another sense too, which is, and maybe this is actually just the same thing you were saying, but you know, you cannot give away what you yourself do not have. And I can hardly blame a person who showed up at an AA meeting, you know, 10 years ago, was never given any information about what alcoholism really was, never discerned for themselves whether they even had this problem. They found a welcoming group. They strived to be friendly and helpful. And now they are being, at least by their own lights, to try to be as friendly and helpful to others as they can. What do I expect that person to do? What I'm more directing this to is, you know, if you are the alcoholic described in this book, like, you need to be in a volume business when it comes to carrying this message, right? Yeah. Because it's a counterintuitive message that, like, you know, it, and I think one of the reasons this podcast is, and media of this form and sobriety memes and so on are helpful, is because it is a counterintuitive thing. Alcoholism does not make a ton of sense, and you would never, you know, until you were probably near death, you might never figure it out for yourself. It is a counterintuitive message, and we need to be, I think, you know, as you say, it is effective sponsorship, and but the fellowship, I think, needs to sort of, the fellowship's structure ought to be downstream from what effective sponsorship is. Right, because the whole point of the AA group is to carry its message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And if anything about a group is not structured to do that, then it's fair enough, I think, to ask, like, well, why does it work that way then? And if, you know what I mean?
I will say I am very comfortable, though, in this position insofar as I don't feel any sense of obligation. We're almost like mercenaries or like behind enemy lines, where it's like, it's easier for me to take pot shots at mainline Alcoholics Anonymous and like bitch about the meeting and then go and just look for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, just talk to them and then get the fuck out of there and go on with my life. Like, I'm very comfortable. Yeah. I don't want to complain too much because I'm very comfortable with this. I'm basically like a little hawk swarming around in the parking lot, and I just like, look, hopefully there's one person there, you know, who I might be able to be helpful to, and then I go do my other shit. And I kind of like it this way, right? I mean, I don't want to be in charge, for the record, so nobody asked me.
Oh my god, I've been to exactly one business meeting, and I can say with confidence I absolutely do not want to be in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to zero, and a thought I've had quite a bit lately is like, There's nothing about the demonstrated effectiveness of this spiritual solution for alcoholism that requires me to believe that the further organizational ideas and how to structure the fellowship and how to run the whole thing need to also be good, right? Like, I can be like, look, this is a busted structure for a fellowship. It is what there is, but like, the solution is effective. The way that AA is structured is creating problems that I'm not in any position to solve. And so what that leaves me with is, as you say, like, all right, well, what I can do is I can try to be engaged in a volume business of my own. Like, I can try to create the sort of fellowship that I crave out of, you know, whatever, you know, the raw materials that are supplied, right? But like, one thing I just want to sort of like, you know, just convey is that, like, you know, if you're a regular listener to this show, you may be sort of like, you may not know how much you have to contribute just by virtue of understanding simple propositions like, yeah, what is alcoholism, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, if you are a person who thinks, well, gee, I don't know if I have a lot to offer in terms of being a sponsor and so on, like, brother or sister, let me tell you, if you know how to help a person figure out if they're an alcoholic, you are like 1% already, yeah, right? Yeah. You could be the person, if you know nothing else, if that was the only thing that you knew, if you were like, now, unfortunately, I don't remember anything about what happens after that, 2 through 12, we're going to have to go to kind of check the reference materials, but I can help you figure out if you have this problem and the nature of it. That can save lives, right? That is what eventually saved my life. Okay. Is it like, finally, I finally realized like, oh, so like, ah, oh, I'm scared now, right? Because, yeah, I really didn't understand the nature of what was going on. And so, you know, just a little, just like, that's the business that I think, you know, this is the business we've chosen, essentially. This is Alcoholics Anonymous in the year 2024. And I'm not the president of AA, and
yet
empowered to do anything about it.
Yeah. One of Tony's yet.
I think, yeah, that's
one thing I would add is, one thing that I realized recently is, so I used to think that if I'm going to an AA meeting, it's incumbent on me to also share. And I like, you know, as people might guess, I like to talk. I like to hear myself talk. I think I enjoy it. So oftentimes if I go to an AA meeting, I will talk. But it is not at all important to what Tony was saying, that you actually, I mean, it's nice if you feel compelled to talk. If you think it would be useful, you should talk. You don't even need to fucking talk in the meeting, though.
No.
No, you just need to be there. You just need to be there, yeah, and have eyes and see, because you will see if there, you know, if you go and it's the same 10 people that are always there, then you know, like, okay, if I can be helpful, I will. But there's nobody here who, maybe all 10 of them have no idea what's going on, but there's nobody in a state where I can, like, I need to help them. But you'll know when you see the person who does need help, and you can talk to that person, and that you can just be one of the people in their story. Maybe they'll never remember your name, but won't matter. You will be part of the reason that they ultimately get better, and that is, mm-hmm, a gift. And important.
Yeah, I find that when I do share in a meeting, and I do that less and less now, because in the beginning I was just like really like trying to like get some solution into that meeting, and it was just, man, it was like banging my head against a brick wall. But the most effective shares that I've ever done in meetings, I was just talking about step one. Like, I was just talking, yeah, about like the hopelessness of like being unable to stop yourself from doing it, like seeing it coming and being like, oh shit, like it's gonna happen again and there's nothing I can do, right? Those are the shares that people came up to me afterwards and they were like, I've never heard anybody talk like that. Mm-hmm. Like, can you help me? Can you talk to me, right? So yeah, I tend to limit, even when I'm like invited to speak as like the main speaker, I try to keep most of my share about step one, because that's the stuff that people have trouble getting. And of course, people will then counter share at me and be like, well, I never had any of that, but here I am and I'm doing fine. But, mm-hmm, you know, you can't be worried about those people.
Totally with you on that. In some ways, I do the same thing, or a close cousin talking about the 10th step promises,
yeah,
and in other words, what it means to be a recovered alcoholic, which is really just another way of talking about the first step, right? Because they're so mirror image in that, like, that they really go together. And I have also, I have produced, like, you know, some unfavorable reactions doing that, but it's fine because at some level, what the hell else is a meeting for other than to have a new person who's like, wait, oh, that's alcoholism? I have that. What do I do about it? And then that work must necessarily happen one-on-one. Yeah. Or perhaps to hear, wait, that state of mind is possible where you're just not thinking about alcohol like at all. Like it could like be in your house, you could be at a bar, you could be watching movies where there's scenes of drinking or whatever, and that doesn't bother you. I want that. What else is a meeting even plausibly? I mean, I can imagine some sort of like, you know, structured contexts, you know, deep big book studies, things like that. But like as a general matter, the mind run of just like an AA meeting you show up to, if it's not about connecting the person who's still sick to a person who needs to stay well by helping others, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know,
we're getting that. Well, we're getting our medicine, Tony. We're going so we can finally feel a part of and be with our people and.
I did like the when I was in rehab, I did like going to get my meds every day. That was really a healing experience, and I just, you know, I need more of that in my life.
I would take your meds if you have any extra. You can cheat them.
Well, they're just anti-seizure medication, so you know, it's not that fun.
No
seizures though, so that's something.
I'll take it.
You could watch a bunch of content with bright lights and flashing images and just be totally fine.
Jealous. I can't do that now.
So wait, you looked forward to getting your medication every day because you're just so bored. You got to like take a walk down the hallway.
Honestly, kind of, that was part of it. It was to walk outside, get some fresh air. And you know, it's like at night, you get like some melatonin, and I'd be like, you know, maybe I'll have cool dreams. I mean, it was just, it's a dull, dull experience being in there. And then, you know, they check my vitals and, you know, all that stuff.
I remember being in an institutional setting and just like that part of the day, like if you were good, if you had your privileges, you could like walk down the hallway and get a Butterfinger from the vending machine. Yeah, no, I get it.
Nice.
That was a highlight of my damn day.
Absolutely.
Should do an institutionalization pod.
Yeah. Now, what I will defend is non-alcoholics in rehab and institutions, right? That's a perfect place for them, right? Those are places that could actually supply non-alcoholics plenty of help, some coping skills, some, you know, basic detox, things like that. That's fine. There's just no need to then sort of, you know, dump people into 12-step fellowships when they leave. You know, that's not really as helpful.
We can get rid of all of our copies of Living Sober there. Just airdrop them.
At least it would be helpful.
You'll be
to
fine.
Them. Yeah. like those are people who you can just give them tools or whatever they say, and they should be good, right? Like you should be fine. You can get out of here, stamp. Like you don't need to do anything else. Go back to your life.
That's a cool way to qualify somebody, which is instead of giving them like, I'm going to give you a big book because I'm going to help you. Give them a copy of Living Sober, and if that stuff works for them, then you're done. And if it doesn't, have them call you and be like, okay, so you have alcoholism, as it turns out.
Hold on. I wrote down two questions I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you remember realizing that there were non-alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous? And do you remember having like a oh shit moment? Because I had a definite moment. I was like, what the fuck?
What was your moment? You go first.
Well, just like, what are they talking about? This isn't any fucking... This was after I kind of was like, oh, this is what alcoholism is, and this is what alcoholism isn't. And then I'm like, there are people who are described like play the tape all the way through. Those kinds of things. When people would say that, I would be shocked. Like, what the fuck are you doing in here? You know?
Yeah.
But I was way up, you know, I was being a judgmental fuck about it too, which I don't recommend.
Yeah. I mean, I found out what alcoholism is through this podcast. So that was already prepackaged with the, oh yeah, and there's lots of heavy drinkers in AA who don't belong there and all that stuff and the 10-step promises. So I kind of got it all wrapped up in a little package with a neat little bow.
That's nice.
Cool. It's so funny. The way I found this podcast, I had a sponsor. She was my sponsor for like 3 days and she was giving me lots of advice. Like everyone's going to be able to hear my cat purring. Sorry. Everybody was giving me lots of advice, like well, you know, if you just cared about your child enough, you'd stop drinking. Or like, so anyway, this one sponsor.
Damn, I should have tried that.
Care about
my
your child
kid?
More.
Oh my god.
Should have tried loving my offspring.
That's, never done that before. That.
Thanks.
But no, and she showed me Instagram memes. She's just like, haha, isn't this funny? She's trying to be like the cool older sister sponsor, right? And then that's how I found this podcast. Like, so hours and hours of doom scrolling. Yeah, it did. And then I drank again, and she was like, you're not taking this seriously. And then, like, blocked my number.
That's unfortunate.
But I think about that sometimes, and I'm like, in a way, she was kind of an effective sponsor without knowing it. Like, totally by accident. Close your eyes and throw a dart. But yeah, I do remember feeling angry after I found that out for a while. Like, what the fuck are you people doing? You would have let me die and gone on accusing me of not loving my child enough.
Yeah, it was the idea that there were non-alcoholics in AA was introduced to me actually in a somewhat stronger form by the guy who took me through the steps. And the way that he sort of expressed it was, there are a lot of untreated codependents in Al-Anon who are in this fellowship to get high on their drug of choice, which is telling alcoholics what to do and how to stay out of trouble. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, that makes complete sense. And then I can even build up a little bit of empathy for that, right? Mm-hmm. That is something I can sort of like, you know, like, well, that's a tough assignment. And of course, then you don't really know that that's your problem any more than I, you know, what my problem is, and I don't know my, you know, like that I kind of get. But I'm now kind of always on the lookout for like, is this person just a sick and suffering untreated codependent who is really not a lot different than me, trying to sort of like manage whatever their spiritual pain by this sort of ineffective means. And I can develop some empathy for that. You know, I can.
You sort of answered my second question, which was, do you tell sponsees that, like, yeah, you're surrounded by non-alcoholics? Because I've done both of these things where that was a very tactful explanation, Tony, that you got. I've basically like been like, oh, you like this Alcoholics Anonymous thing and you're enjoying it? Let me just shit all fucking over it. And and I've felt horrible after I've done that. And I'm like, just let them find out on their own, you know? And then wait for them to call me like, what the fuck was that? And then I'll be like, let me let you in on a secret, pal. I don't know.
Well, part of the reason that it is good to tell people this is because I will often hear back from people who are new ideas or stuff that I know didn't come from me. And I know that they're sort of picking up at meetings, and that's fine. I'm not, you know, if I wish I could forbid sponsees to go to any meetings, but I can't and I don't. But I know that they're going to hear things, and I need to, if I'm going to be helpful to them, I need to introduce the idea that, like, look, as unfair as this feels, when you go to these places that are full of people that it seems like should kind of know the answers and are there to help you and all seem to be reading to some extent out of the same hymnal, some of those people are unreliable narrators. It's not their fault. We don't need to get mad at them. But you're going to hear things at meetings of AA from people who report decades of continuous sobriety that are just not true for you.
Right.
And like, because otherwise it can get very easy to kind of be like, I've got all these messages coming in and we're just going to kind of get intermixed, right? And it's like, then the 12-step spiritual program of action becomes one tool in the larger toolkit, right? As opposed to being the spiritual toolkit about which these authors were talking. It's like, the book, sponsorship, calling alcoholics, going to meetings, like hitting the gyms, you know,
right,
whatever, yoga, it all becomes this kind of like big, all things considered wellness program.
Right.
And I feel like under those conditions, the urgency of action to do these uncomfortable things is going to be lost because, like there can be some uncomfortable yoga positions, but there's probably no position quite as uncomfortable as like, you know, downward facing across from a person you've wronged. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, to answer your question, Ted, I don't know if I'm forceful enough with people on step one. I haven't found the right balance with that. Because I feel like a lot of the time I'm describing alcoholism to people and it's just not landing. And some of these are people who I'm like, internally, I'm thinking like, damn, you need this. Like, if I were you, I would have started this yesterday. I don't know. I'm very subtle with the way that I make that point. I'm like, yeah, that works for some people, but that didn't work for me. You know, I'm like, I would take that advice and it didn't help me. I would get drunk again anyway and then wonder like what the fuck was wrong with me. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should. Do you find it effective to tell people like, oh yeah, you're surrounded by people who don't need this?
Only sometimes. I mean, I think the way Tony did, I'm going to start having people just call Tony and I'm just like, yeah. Well, my buddy will explain this to you because that was really good. I think it depends on the person. And I think that often, I mean, I would also say, Jane, that if you feel like people aren't getting it, then they're just not in a position to hear it, period. Just like, yeah, I spend a lot of time doing the same thing and I'm like, they're not hearing me. Yeah. Or, but yeah, I think it can be.
Those are the people who, by the way, I feel comfortable when they go out and drink again because it's like, okay, we've had a step one conversation. I have described alcoholism to you. If it's not landing and mm-hmm. you feel that there's something like you want to, or yeah. if you not want to, but you know, if you then like fall on your ass again and then you're like, how did this happen? Like now you have a framework to understand it.
Oh, they're Fred, right? That's exactly what happens to Fred and more about alcoholism.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that can be a good thing. You know, sorry, but I interrupted you.
No, please.
Senator. But I was going to say that one thing that the guy that sponsored me did that actually was really effective was he, you know, that paragraph that's like, here are some of the methods we've tried and it runs through some things. And a lot of them have kind of an old timey mm-hmm. feel. But he ran through with me a longer list of stuff that's a little more, because that paragraph does end by saying like, and we could all, you know, increase the list. He ran through with me first speaking of himself, like, first thing I was, you know, on his list was like willpower, and then, you know, harm reduction, substitution strategies, going to detox treatment centers, cognitive behavioral therapy, counseling, having a sponsor, 90 meetings in 90 days, meeting makers make it, studying the big book, frothy emotional appeals, and like it's a long list of stuff that he went through. Yeah. And each of those items, of course, he kind of crafted this list. So each of these items were things that he had tried and in his experience had not kept him sober. And of course, I couldn't help but be listening and thinking, I've done that, I've done that, I've done that, I've done that. And then realizing that like, I literally, and he's like, you know, and then you can have a conversation where it's like, anything else you could think of, right? And then I'm looking at this list, realizing, actually I was looking at it in preparation for this episode, realizing like, holy shit. Like I have actually tried everything I can think of to stay sober and none of it has worked. Like I've never, it just something about seeing it all collected like that made me realize like, oh my God, this is scary. And it was especially effective, of course, because I was talking to a person who was like, yeah, that was me too, right? Like, yeah, mm-hmm. going to a bunch of meetings also didn't work for me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes I feel like what's happening with people or in the position you were describing, Jane, is they'd be like, you know, I never actually have tried going to a lot of meetings, or I never have, you know, tried, you know, getting some therapy to deal with some other stuff that maybe is actually, you know, a problem unrelated to alcoholism or whatever. And how can I expect them to really know anything, to know whether they have alcoholism before they can really discern those two things, right? It's like, now you know what the difference is. And like, you know, let's see what happens to you. And I hope you don't die of your first step experience, but I also hope you don't die by getting hit by a bus. Like the world has lots of random stuff in it. And, you know, I can't guarantee your safety, alcoholic or no.
I think it's also worth noting that like, just because you haven't done everything on that list, somebody said earlier, it is about discernment, particularly step one. It's like, you don't have to, because I've never been to I don't remember the list, but I've never been to a sanitarium, for example, or like there are certain things on that list that I've not done and I don't feel any need to go do them. I'm quite confident that I am the kind of alcoholic described in the book based on these things. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I've tried everything. I feel like I could have gotten weirder with it. I feel like I could have done some other stuff, but I'm cool.
You could have taken advice from Reddit and gone on a keto diet. Yeah. There's always that one guy in every alcoholism sub who's like, you need to go on a keto diet.
That is the only objective rock bottom that I've ever heard. That's it. But yeah, it's not absolutely necessary that you do it, but it is a useful exercise no matter what to be like, I've tried a fuckload of stuff and all of it was absolutely worthless. I don't want to try anything else.
I saw that list and was amazed at how many things on that list that I had tried. Yeah.
Yeah, and right. The question, of course, is like, as you say, Senator, like, if there's stuff on the list that you haven't tried, Well, do you want to? Right? Because if you want to do that, then like I can convey like you have my total support in that.
Absolutely.
Right? Like you're not a bad sponsee. If you want to just chill and like just see if going to you know, see a qualified therapist and take a trip, cool. I hope that works. Like it's not bad to not be an alcoholic. It's actually kind of good in some ways. And I can totally support a person kind of, you know, in that position. I think it was a early episode of this podcast where I think it might have even been you, Senator, who said as to somebody with like a gambling problem or something, like, well, you know, I'm not a gambling addict, but like, why don't you just try not betting on anything for like 6 months and see what happens, right? And like, that always struck me as this kind of hopefully scientific approach to things, right? Like to discern whether I have this problem, let's just look at like, well, like what would this problem look like? What evidence would be sufficient to kind of tell me either way? And do I have enough evidence to be convinced? Like one of the things that's on the list is jail and incarceration. Well, I've never been to jail, but I don't think it would have helped, right? And I'm not interested in trying jail.
Yeah, nor I. I've actually been to jail. One of the things that you said, I'll keep this episode going for hours. I understand that like there's supposed to be a certain length and we're probably coming up on it. But one of the things you said, Tony, that I was such a like manipulative little weirdo that there was a part of my brain, and I think this is relatively common, that I was like, sponsor's going to be mad if it turns out I'm not an alcoholic, right? or like people are going to be upset if I choose not to do AA. Like they spent an hour with me in a parking lot. So now I'm pretty much locked in I got to keep coming for like at least a year, right? Because this is going to bother them. And of course that's absolute garbage. But the thing that I want to mention is, well, one, absolutely not true. Like for me, I'm like, part of me is relieved. I'm like, okay, we don't have to meet again. I can do other shit with my time. The other thing is like more important for, I think, people who've listened this far is you don't want to be the kind of person who the would-be sponsee is talking to and they pick up a vibe that you might be upset. Like, yeah. You do not want to be the kind of, and God forbid you become one of those people who would, because there are people who would be upset. Let's be real. Like, there are people who are like, I can't believe that this person wasted my time, or whatever, right? Like, how important it is to create a space or a relationship with this person where it is abundantly clear to them, like, that you, what are they saying in working with others? Like, there are no axes to grind. I don't know, one of you two probably remembers, but like, you're under
no people to please.
You're under no obligation to me. Like, how important is that? Because you should. The whole point is that you find your truth in this thing. And if your truth is that you're not an alcoholic, then I've done my job. I've done a huge service to somebody if they leave being convinced they're not an alcoholic, even if they are an alcoholic, even if they've momentarily decided that they're not. I've still done them a huge service because they have at least clarity for the moment, or they're unequivocal, they know what to do. And then if they go back out and they start drinking and then it kicks their ass again, like Jane, like you said, if I explain what alcoholism is, then they'll know then, right? I've been an honest representation of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't do any better than that.
Yeah, I think the people who are the most vocal about their feeling that they were harmed by AA, one thing that a lot of them mentioned is that they were like persuaded that they were alcoholics, right? And they were persuaded that what they had was a death sentence and that they could never drink again. And then they went back out again and found out that wasn't true. And they were, you know, upset about that. They were harmed by that. I think everybody is owed an open-ended conversation about, like, let's just examine the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the in working with others, the idea that somebody might say, well, I think I can still control my drinking is discussed. And the suggested response, it's like, yeah, maybe you can, right? You know, if you're not as bad off as I eventually got to be, maybe you can. And, you know, I have to admit, nobody's taken me up on this yet, but I have sometimes offered, if somebody sort of is like, okay, I don't think I have alcoholism, I have still made it clear, like, look, that doesn't mean that we can't have a discussion about a spiritual way of life. That's open to all, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody can grow closer to discern, you know, to a higher power of their understanding. I've never ever met somebody who's like, yeah, I want to do a fourth step and make amends to everybody in my life, even though I can't take step one, and I don't exactly know what the 12th step would look like for those people. But I've offered it, right? In that sense of like, yeah, like if you can drink in moderation, but you want to grow spiritually, that would be cool too, right? Like, in other words, it doesn't have to be the end of the relationship. You don't have to pretend to have alcoholism for me to, like, listen to all the ways that self-centeredness is holding you back. But, you know, as I say, no takers yet. But if you are a non-alcoholic listening to this show who would like to discuss your shortcomings, get in touch.
Flash the bat signal or whatever Iron Man's thing is. Just flash it and he'll show up.
In response to what Tony said, I've had at least one person that I met with who didn't have the symptoms of alcoholism, but was like, you know, depressed and wanted to talk to somebody. And I was like, I mean, what part of the third step prayer says that I'm only supposed to spend my life being useful to alcoholics, right? Like, if this woman just wants to talk, why not? Like, why the fuck not? And then, you know, this person eventually went away because they didn't actually want to do the steps. But I don't feel that that was time wasted. Like, cool.
I found out recently that there's something called spiritual direction. Do either of you know about this? It's basic.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's really cool. It's essentially, this is like a whole topic for some other thing, but it's like, it's not dissimilar to what you described, Tony. It's just like growing, like learning to see and understand the ways and become more in contact with the way that God is working in your life. And it's like, you don't have to be an alcoholic to do that. And yeah, I think that's pretty much what you're describing. And that's obviously, we need more of that in the world too. It's just that it doesn't necessarily have to be the 12 steps. And I'm not uniquely qualified to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I never connected that, but you're right. That is essentially what, you know, sort of spiritual direction is. And I've often thought about the fact that, you know, it is too bad that there is, if I've got a non-alcoholic in front of me and they're like, look, it turns out I'm kind of just a hard drinker. I can stay sober on willpower, but I'm attracted to AA because I like this spiritual way of life. Where can I go to develop and have a community of people like that who are not alcohol, as my understand, but who just want to grow spiritually? Where can they send that person? The answer is like, brother or sister, I'm not sure that there is a non-denominational answer to that question.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because that may also be, I mean, if obviously if a person is like, you know, already has deep ties to a particular faith, you know, maybe the answer is they can do that. But the kind of ecumenicism of AA plus, minus alcoholism, I suppose you can't even really say that that's what the Oxford group was, because those guys were a kind of, you know, odd blend of, sort of first century Christians, as I understand matters. So, maybe the name of such an organization would just be Anonymous, but I think the 4chan people already took that one.
Bastards.
Oh.
Cool masks. Yeah. Jane, do you want to send us out? You want to? Have we even defended this? Did we even?
Yeah. I think that the culture of openness and like not judging, not like shutting people out, not making people feel unwelcome is a part of AA culture that I like. And I'm just concerned that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's all.
Well said. Tight. Thank you both.
Right.
Topic
Thank
defended.
You. Topic defended. Play the music.
I win.
This has been a podcast greater than yourself.
A podcast greater than yourself was created by recovered alcoholics. All involved in the creation of this podcast are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous who wish to carry the message of our own recovery to those who still suffer. We do not claim to represent Alcoholics Anonymous. All comments are from our own experiences as alcoholics who have recovered by following the directions for the 12 steps found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for listening.